Blog Talk Radio.
What the world needs now is love, sweet love. It's the only thing that there's just too little of. What the world needs now is love. We love, no, not just for some, but for everyone.
Greetings, it's time to love. I'm Lydia, your lighthouse of love, teaching, motivating, and guiding you on your journey to loving yourself. Yes, it starts with loving yourself. So, this is a little different show. It started last week when I was traveling to Boston, and I'm usually doing my show on Saturdays at 3 o'clock, but I have a big thank you to Nina and Brenda for doing a special LNB Passage to Empowerment, Meaningful Moments. I know they had fun doing that, and I am grateful that they kept that radio spot open. That was very, very nice of them. Thank you, ladies. Traveling to Boston. Oh, man, it was so inspiring, exciting, and fun. And I am so blessed to have my husband, who is my absolute favorite traveling companion. And he's here today on Time to Love. Hi, Mike.
Hello, Lydia.
How are you doing?
Doing great.
Excellent. Yeah, we are basically going to cover the sights, the sounds, the tastes, all of it today on this show. And you might want to start out, Mike, telling them maybe why we chose Boston, what was going on.
You know, I have run quite a few marathons in the past. This was my 15th marathon, and I had run Boston once before in 2001, and it was a spectacular experience. So many people, such great energy, great run, but I was trying to run it for time, and so while I noticed many of the wonderful things going on around me, I didn't really take them in to the extent that I probably could have. Because I was trying to run for a good time, and Boston is a very difficult course, so it's hard on you to try to run a good time. When I saw what happened last year in April of 2013 at the Boston Marathon, I was, of course, horrified, disgusted, appalled. And most of all, one of the things I couldn't stop thinking is, you might as well bomb Disneyland, because there are so many children at the Boston Marathon. One of the things that stood out in my mind about the first time I ran it is high-fiving all the little kids standing along the race route. And I, like I said, I was running for good, trying to run for a good time, so I wasn't trying to high-five them. It was just hard not to. You were just drawn to them. And to bomb somewhere, and one of the people killed in the bombing was an 8-year-old boy. It just horrifying somebody would do that. And the first thing I thought, and what I thought while I trained, what I thought while I qualified to do Boston, what I thought going out to Boston was, we need to send a message. The message is, we aren't going to let you do that. And I felt the people of peace needed to send a message to people of violence that we're not going to let you do that. And that's what I felt up until I started actually running the race. So that's what the background was of wanting to go run Boston.
Yeah, I and as soon as you said you wanted to run it, I was really excited. You didn't necessarily say, do you want to come with, but I'm like, I'm on board. And
yeah,
go ahead.
I was just going to say, I think you insisted you were going with, and so there wasn't ever really a question about it.
Yeah, I could do that, can't I? Yeah, well, it to me was very important to send that message, and I felt that so much.
Here's why I say I went there thinking it was about sending a message until I started running it, and then I realized it was not about sending a message at all. It was about a healing. It was a healing of the spirit for people who were there, people who had been there last year. You could feel it. You could just feel positive energy coming from people. And it was more a realization that we all need. We all need to realize this as often as we can in our lives, that the antidote to hate, the only possible antidote to hate, is love. And just feeling the love that we felt from other human beings for 4 days in Boston was an incredible experience. You know, I tend to be a regional stereotyper, and I would not think that if you spent 4 days in most big cities on the East Coast, you would experience people being 100% polite to you. That's not what I would expect. Mm-hmm. Call me, like I said, I may be a regional stereotyper, but I wouldn't expect it. In Boston, we not only got courteous, decent, polite, we got kindness, people going out of their way to be kind to us. And there's a big difference between being polite, which I think everybody should be to other strangers, and actually being kind, getting outside of your comfort zone and being kind to people. And we went everywhere. We did public transportation for 4 days. We encountered tons of people, and the kindness was overwhelming.
It really was. It really was. We had an awesome time.
Yeah, it's hard to imagine having a better time. Well, if you get that positive energy for 4 days, yeah, you're going to have an awesome time, unless you're just dead set against it, which, of course, we weren't.
No, of course we weren't. Yeah, see, folks, this is why I married this man. He's wonderful, definitely. Seriously, but we did take public transportation, and it was very easy. We ended up staying in Winthrop by the sea, a little town just really close to the airport. And we ended up, you want to talk about it, about our public transportation experience?
Sure. I was astounded that we got in and out of Boston so easily. There were so many more people there. It's a big city anyway. And public transportation is just totally easy. It's $18 for a week-long pass. You can ride all the T, what they call the T, the subway, mass transit, kind of speed train kind of thing, or public buses. It was so easy for us to get around, and it just makes me wonder, which I've wondered many times, why isn't public transportation more developed everywhere? It just makes it so easy, inexpensive, and, you know, it was great. Just one of the many things that was.
It was really great, and we fully utilized that. We got a deal for $18 because there was a couple times we rode in a wrong direction and we needed to backtrack, and we just, you know, just shoved our little ticket in there, and it spits it back out, and we're on again. Yeah, and it was good for buses as well as the T, and, it was so convenient. And we met people. As you said, people were so friendly. Tell them about on our way to Winthrop.
Well, I could tell them about any number of experiences. People in restaurants, people in the liquor store, people on the beach just walking up to us. But, yeah, one of our first experiences, speaking of going the wrong way, we actually overstayed our welcome on the T, the first ride out from the airport, and went, I think, two stops past what was supposed to be ours to get off for our hotel. And so we got off looking lost. A homeless person who was sitting on the street called me over. What are you looking for? I said, well, the bus. And she said, well, you just missed it. It just went by. She said, where are you going? Well, I told her Port Shirley. I thought that's her. Yeah, I thought that was the name of it, Port Shirley. It's actually Point Shirley. She goes, you're looking for what? Looked at me like I was crazy. I could understand it. But right away, very kind. Honey, where are you trying to go? And I, you know, told her Winthrop. She goes, you need the Orient Heights stop. You need to get back on there and go back. Well, of course, I called the hotel at that point to check, and she was absolutely right. And, you know, that's kind of a remnant of coming from negative energy that I had to check, because looking in her eyes, I could tell she was telling me the truth. And I guess I was wondering, is it actually the truth? I knew it was her version of the truth, but, you know, she seemed a little bit tipsy or under the influence, but she had her information absolutely right and just wanted to help. And that's
right.
Started it off. just people going out of their way. Her calling me over and what are you looking for? Never asked for change or anything, which somebody could, you know, a sort of cynical motivation to her, but not at all. Just wanted to help.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Yeah, and then when we got to our inn, it was called Inn at Crystal Cove, and it's an amazing place, and they immediately tell us they upgraded us to a room that had been recently renovated, and that was an amazing experience. It was right across from the harbor, so you could see Boston. It was absolutely beautiful room.
You could see the harbor, which is amazing. It used to be filthy. It used to be one of the dirtiest harbors in America, and we were reading on this bike path that goes around it, or jogging path, whatever, about a judge, and I guess it was federal court case, ordered they clean up the harbor, and he would go out there periodically to check on how it was going and thank the workers for working so hard and getting such progress done, and got it really clean. It's very clean for so close to a big city. You'd never have known it was dirty at all. And had a great view of Boston, of airplanes landing. And, yeah, that was a wonderful thing, too. Like I said, a nice bike path along the beach. Not the, you know, most wonderful beach in the world, but, hey, it's Boston, you know. You're there for the history and the race and other things. You're not there to see beaches. If you were going for beaches, you'd have gone somewhere else in the first place.
Right. But, you know, I saw pictures of it, and I was commenting after the winter, I felt like they would probably clean it up. You know, it wasn't that it was dirty. It just was weathered from the winter, which they had a harsh winter, just like all the back east did. And I saw pictures of it, and it looked a lot nicer than what we saw. But, yeah.
It looked a whole lot worse.
No, it sure couldn't, but it was beautiful. So we had hiking, you know, like some nice walking trails all around. So on one side, where our room looked out at the harbor, but then on the other side, not too far away, I think they said 175 yards. I don't know about yards, but anyway, there is the Atlantic side, so you could see the ocean. And that's what we walked along, and then there's a water treatment plant out there, and we walked around there and went to that park that was, I wish I could remember that judge's name. It was a good Italian name, and and I thanked him, you know, even though he's long gone, but I thanked him because it was really a beautiful park. It was real nice benches. In fact, they had memorials. A lot of people who lost loved ones dedicated a bench. You know, they probably bought the bench and dedicated it to their loved ones. And it was really, really nice. We went there at sunset, and it was a beautiful sunset. We had the most amazing weather. It was amazing. A little too hot for you for running the marathon, but it was beautiful there.
Yeah, that's how you know it's beautiful weather. If it's a little too hot for marathon runners, then you know it's almost perfect. Yeah, mid-60s, nice breeze, beautiful spring weather, you're right, which is kind of hit or miss in the Boston area that time of year, but as it is in Colorado that time of year. But, yeah, got great weather.
Oh, yeah, and we had been watching the weather, you know, the predicted weather, and it was going to be partly cloudy and a lot cooler, and we had sunshine, and it was beautiful. It was absolutely amazing. I really, really enjoyed it. And earlier today I was reading about Winthrop, and it's one of the first settlements. There was so much history. That's the one thing about Boston. There's so much history there. We have to go back when we have a couple weeks. We really do, because there's just so much to take in there. I think it's one of the more interesting cities I've ever been in.
Hard to disagree with that.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, there's the Freedom Trail that you can take. There's the Harbor Walk that you can take. In fact, we did some of the Harbor Walk, but, man, that Harbor Walk goes all over. We should have had a map of that because it goes all over. But, yeah, it's a very walking-friendly and mass transit-friendly city, definitely. Do you want now, and food, we got to talk about food because I love to eat. And our first night, we just walked along, our hotel was on Shirley Street, and we walked along Shirley in the direction that we saw some shops and stuff, and we hit upon Alia Ristorante. Do you want to tell them about that?
Sure. Very, very big city, nice, warm. You walk in, small, table for two open right by the window. You kidding me? So, well, that's Winthrop as opposed to Boston. If it had been downtown Boston, there's no way. We would have waited an hour and a half and never got that table unless we could slip 100 in the maitre d's hand or something. Here, we just went right to it, sat down. Waitress brought up a potential drawback. Did you bring any wine? No, we said. Do we have to bring it ourselves? Yes, she said. We said, where can we get it? Well, there's a liquor store right around the corner. Of course, in big cities, you never know what that means. It could be half a mile away. But literally, right around the corner, probably 50 steps, there's a liquor store. I go in. Of course, the guy behind the counter is exceptionally nice and kind because he's in Boston during that 4 days. And he, what are you looking for? Oh, can I help you? And he probably didn't drink wine at all, but he was certainly trying to be helpful and directed me to a very nice red. And so we were back and had very good chicken parmesan. Lydia had a very good noci, I believe, is what she ordered. But then, to top it all off, the owner came over, sat down with us, talked with us, Saeed, a Muslim from Morocco, who expressed very much his feelings about Muslim people who came to this country with hate in their hearts, and went from there to, of course, anybody. It's not about Muslims or Christians or anybody. It's about anybody with hate in their hearts and his not being able to understand that. And he was putting in words, very eloquent words, Lydia and I felt, what we would feel and what I've said already, but what we would feel over and over and over is that positive energy. And he was just expressing it from someone who had felt shame, not anger, not that's wrong, not we can't take that, but shame for an act done by others that he had nothing to do with and would never have agreed to or thought was okay if he had known anything about. But he felt shame because it was people from his faith, and he understands in his head, but less so in his heart, well, it's not about, you know, what you call your faith. It's about what you demonstrate. Saeed demonstrated love, positive energy, and he was putting it forth, like I said, in very eloquent words, what we would feel, what I felt just humming off of the people that lined the marathon course, and they were not saying it to me, but I certainly felt that same thing that he was saying to us up very close to us. And so that was a very interesting first night in Boston, getting started that way. You know, first the person on the street directing us, then the owner in the restaurant being so warm, and the guy behind the counter in the liquor store. And I'm starting to feel at that point there is something very special going on here.
It was magical. It was really magical. Also, don't forget the people at the inn. Call us whenever you need us. We're on duty 24 hours, you know. Absolutely,
Richard,
amazing.
Richard, the maintenance guy, came and worked on our TV for quite some time. Never actually did get it up and running, but at that point, we didn't care. We weren't there to watch TV anyway. But again, another very nice, warm person talking to us, telling us about the things. Asked if, when we said where we had gone for dinner, he said, oh, the people who own it are really nice. We said, yeah, we've already discovered that. So, you know, but he didn't have to point out anybody. As far as we saw, everybody we saw was very nice.
It really was. I actually was telling Brenda that there was a part of me when we were walking around town, I really felt like if I was just had a little more balls, which y'all know I have a bit of them, I would have on Easter Sunday loved to have just like have heard children laughing and stuff and gone up on a porch and knocked on the door and saying, hi, you know, we're from Colorado. We're here for the marathon, and we just wanted to experience Easter. I think that people would have invited us in to
probably
have Easter dinner.
Probably.
I, that's, I mean, I really felt that walking around. And like I said, you know, when I grow a little bit bigger ones, I will definitely next time when I have that feeling, I might just try it.
Knowing you, you might. Yep, I don't think I'll go with you, but you go ahead.
Yeah, see, I got to pull them along sometimes. But, you know, I would have gone, honey, honey, they said it's okay, come on in. But just because I found, another thing we loved was the accents.
Accents
you just got
all kinds of accents.
Oh, yeah, but you just got to, I mean, no matter what nation, like even Saeed had a Boston accent.
He did.
It was so, yeah. I mean, I found that just utterly delightful when the Bostonians would speak. I think my jaw, you know, hung a little bit and some of it I couldn't quite understand, but it was so much fun. And we had a wonderful experience the next morning. We went to brunch at, what was the name of the place? We went there twice.
The High Tide Cafe.
The High Tide Cafe, also just a few blocks from our inn where we stayed.
And just wonderful big city diner stuck right in there in Winthrop, and Winthrop on the sea. And, yeah, the wonderful accents, the owner who is also doing all the cooking, coming over and talking to his customers, I haven't seen yous in a long time. How he has been? And, just wonderfully warm people in there. Found out we were doing the marathon. We wound up eating in there twice. Well, people found out we were doing the marathon at all. And, you know, you would have thought we had brought $8 billion to their economy all by ourselves. You know, just so gracious. So thank you for being here. And, you know, we heard that verbally and just through people's actions all the time. That's just another example.
Yeah. And, you know, another great thing is, I didn't get any fear vibes at all, none at all. There was no fears. It was an outpouring of love. And like you said, it was a healing. It was truly a healing. And I feel very privileged to have been in on it.
Absolutely. And a very uplifting experience. One of those events that even as you're experiencing it, you're thinking, this is going to be a life-changing event for me. You know, this isn't just going to wear off as soon as I get back. And usually after you run a marathon, there's an emotional letdown. It's like the kid 2 days after Christmas going, that's it? I was so amped up. I had so much adrenaline going, and now it's all gone. And now what? You know? But haven't felt that at all, just still feeling totally amped up from having that experience and just knowing it's one of those life-changing events. It changes the way you think about things. You know, in the line of work I do, it's easy to get cynical. Cynicism abounds around you. And just to feel yourself surrounded by, as you just said, Lydia, no fear. In a big city, are you kidding me? No negative vibes from anybody? What's that all about? That doesn't happen. Cities I love, San Francisco, I experienced lots of positive energy there, or Portland, Oregon, but never not a trace of fear.
Right, right. Brenda.
I just wanted to, just tagging on what Mike said about the life changing. So before, when you ran the marathons, how you connected with people was vastly different, was it?
Very much thankful that volunteers were out there or spectators were cheering, but nowhere close to the number and nowhere close to the enthusiasm. I frankly had not trained nearly hard enough for this race, and I could feel it and it's a hard race, so the last 4 or 5 miles I really felt it. And I think many people were running on their own fumes, but also the enthusiasm being generated by the crowd watching them. It it was, you could feel it. You could feel energy coming from people. And some people held signs that said, tap this sign for more energy. And I was thinking, I don't need to run over there and tap your sign. I'm getting it from all of you anyway. And just it's such an invigorating force. Yeah, that, very different, even from the other time I ran Boston, which, like I said, there were lots of people, and it was very amping you up. This time, just 100 times more so. You could just feel it.
They said there was 1 million spectators. One million.
Yeah, I believe it.
There were 36,000 runners. That's a record.
Actually,
also,
that's how many they had signed up. But I read 32,000 actually started, and 98% finished. For that hard a course, a bunch of amateurs, that many runners, and a day that turned out pretty warm, that's a really good finish rate. And I'm not surprised, because there was so much energy coming from the crowd. You know, the guy who won it said he got all this energy off of the crowd. I'm not surprised he did.
Mm. Yeah, and that was an American, right?
Yeah, yeah.
It was an American who won the race. And what was his time? It was unbelievable.
208. And there were a bunch of people behind him had run faster times than that, but he ran a smart, strategic race. He ran when he should have. They were too busy competing against each other and forgot a bit about him until it was too late. And plus, he was almost 38, which for a marathoner is, well, for any, you know, prime athlete is getting up there, unfortunately. But yeah, an incredible race that he ran too.
Did he give us your time? I must have missed it. Did he give us your time?
I did not give my time. My time was 3 hours and 53 minutes. Which I was trying to do is get in under 4 hours. That's the only thing I was thinking of, and I didn't really care about that either, frankly.
Yeah,
and what did you run it before? What did you run it before? I forgot.
The last time I ran Boston, I ran it in 2 hours and 56 minutes. So almost an hour slower this time. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wow.
But, you know, Mike has come in second on 3 or 4 marathons. He's placed second.
I think 4. Yeah, 4. Second places.
Yeah.
Always a bridegroom and never a bride.
Same here. It's my choice.
Yeah. I thought because he didn't train like he used to, and when he told me I'm going to run for fun, that is, I have to tell you, my husband is very determined. He was determined to get me, which he did, and he is very determined in life. And I always say he sets his jaw and he just goes for stuff. But it's like his focus and concentration is palpable. He passes you on a run. I'm like yelling, Mike, Mike. He's got his eye on the finish line. So for him to run for fun was great. It was wonderful for him.
It was amazing. You can tell from the photographs. Normally, my face looks like Lydia says. It's Frankenstein face. It's very chiseled, square jaw, determination. This time, there are pictures of me actually smiling, not a long-distance runner grimace of pain smile either, but a real smile. Pictures of me with my arms in the air, egging on the crowd to make more noise, things I never do in marathons. I told Lydia I was running by the Wellesley girls. Now, the Wellesley girls are by Wellesley College, which is a girls' school college. They come out and they have signs, kiss me, and they try to have creative signs. Well, some runners actually stop and kiss them. I had never stopped or kissed them before. One, I'm too shy, and I was trying to run for time before. So this time, I'm running, and I'm high-fiving them all. One girl says, aren't you going to kiss me? So I stop, I go back, I kiss her on the cheek, I keep running. All these things I never would have done before, have never done before, and it's just, okay, I feel so much positive energy. I'm giving some back, too. High-fived, I don't know how many kids. And they get such a kick out of it. It's so fun, especially when there's 8 or 9 of them in a row, and you just like a stick on a fence. It's great. Just a great experience.
Yeah, he said, you know, They're little guys. There are little people out there, like five or less, you know, with their hands out, and Mike had to kind of bend over and give them high fives. Yeah.
There were 2 and 3 year olds with their hands up in the air getting high fives.
Aww.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
It just infused you with joy. And I can just imagine this moment lasting the rest of your life. Like you have this little badge somewhere that you were there. And if there's a bad day of all bad days, all you have to think are the words Boston Marathon. And I just can't see how you could not start feeling with joy. I mean, that's how infectious you sound right now, which is, I just love hearing what you guys did. I mean, you didn't talk about the things you did, Lydia, when you helped somebody at the end of the race.
Oh, yeah. Well, I don't even know if we've gotten we've kind of gotten to the race. But I wanted to ask one thing about Mike. Mike, will you talk about the difficulty of it a little bit? Maybe there's someone, if they're not on, you know, listening now, they can archive it, and Marathon might come up and they might listen to it. Why was Boston a hard run?
Boston is difficult because, well, first of all, you can't predict the weather, and sometimes you get really bad weather. Headwinds can be very strong. It can be very cold. Or one year it was about 85 degrees, which is way too hot to run a marathon in. They started about the middle of the day, which is difficult weather-wise. But aside from that, the first 10 miles or so, there is lots of downhill, which is hard on people's legs, especially hard on their quads. Even if you're trying to run slow, there's a lot of pounding, and most people don't train by running downhill. They run on, lots of people now train on treadmills, or they do uphills to make their legs stronger. But not too many people train running downhill. And the first 10 miles, there's lots of downhill. You get to Newton, which is about mile 16, town of Newton, and you start going both up and downhill, but primarily uphill, and they call them the Hills of Newton. And what they call the Heartbreak Hill is in there about mile 20 and a half or so. It starts and goes and goes and goes. In Colorado, it really wouldn't be that much of a hill, but after all the downhill and then all the up and down for about 4 miles in Newton, that hill is very hard. And then you continue to go downhill the rest of the way. So it really takes a toll on people's legs and is a very difficult course that way. If you can make it into downtown and then there's huge crowds and you're in the midst of big buildings, you can see the finish line looming in the distance, still half a mile away, but you've gone almost 26 miles by then. Then you can make it. Then you know you can make it. But yeah, very difficult up till then.
Yeah, I love that. I love that name of Heartbreak Hill. You know, a lot of people, I guess, crash on it, Heartbreak Hill, because crash meaning just physically, they just can't do it. And I stood at mile marker 25 for a while with my new friend. A woman was waiting for the bus. She was waiting for the bus before me right from our hotel. And I started talking to her, and she was a beloved Canadian of all people, Nina, from Vancouver. She was actually a Canadian Mountie, and so was her husband. And just a sweet young woman, Amanda, and I told her that I would give her a shout-out on the show. And we traveled together, and we were at mile 25, and I was getting updates on my phone, which is really, really cool. When we went to the expo, there was an AT&T booth, and they said you can get, you know, input on your phone, text messages. And they only texted me 4 times, but they texted me when Mike started. They texted me at 10K and then at the half and then when he finished. So I kind of knew where he was and stuff. And but Amanda and I had a great time at mile 25. And but there were people that were barely, they couldn't walk. They were holding their quads. You could tell they were cramping really bad. And I would yell, "You can do it, you can do it." And I got a big mouth. And so they could hear me and just trying to give them my energy so that they would finish. Yeah, so the cramping is a big thing. But I'm sorry to say that I did not see my husband in the race. I decided that I wanted to get closer to the end of the race so that I could yell at him, and that's where I was the previous time we were there. And so we had to take subways, and there was a lot of police presence, and they checked backpacks. They told you not to bring backpacks or bags. I bought a very small purse, and sometimes they checked it and sometimes they didn't. But so I got checked once. One time they said, unless it's a big bag, we don't want to check it, and they just shoot us onto the course. That was at mile 25. So we were trying to near the finish line, and it was late enough to where they were at capacity, so I couldn't get anywhere near the course. And then I got a text that you were done, so I was walking to where we, about a half mile from the finish line, where you were going to pick up your bag check that you had checked. And I'm walking along, and I asked a couple people if they were okay, and gave them my energy and helped a guy get to the front of the line in the bathrooms. That was the one thing that bothered me, was there were not enough porta potties, and I didn't think that was well planned. But people said space was probably the issue, but I think they could have had more porta potties. Anyway, I'm walking along, and all of a sudden I see this young woman, and something just said to me that asked her if she was okay. I said, "Are you okay?" And she goes, I'm really in a lot of pain. I'm not feeling good. I'm feeling nauseous." I said, "Have you hydrated enough?" And she said she did. I don't think she did, but her name was Courtney. And I said, "Okay, honey." I said, she had to get to her bag check because her phone was there, and she was going to call the people who were going to meet her. They hadn't actually picked a place. So she needed to get that bag checked. I mean, for a second, I was like, well, maybe you should sit down and I'll go get. But I didn't see any medics along the route or anything. So a lot of people helping, and I probably could have asked them. But anyway, so I said, okay, this is what we're going to do, Courtney. I'm going to talk to you, and we're going to talk the whole way, and it's going to go really fast, and you'll be there. So that's what we did. You know, I'm really good at talking. So and I got her bag. And then I brought her to a medical tent, and she was really, really grateful, and it felt really good to help somebody, you know, because that's what it was all about, the love and the helping and the healing, and, you know, and they took her vitals in the medical tent, and they were pretty, and she knew where she was and everything, because they asked her, "Do you know, what's your name, and do you know what day it is, where are you?" And she knew all that, but she was severely cramping, severely. I don't think she ate enough or drank enough, you know. She had really good time because she came in before Mike, but she was hurting for it, for sure. And she said she had only run one marathon before. She could have started out fast. Those hills probably kicked her butt. Yeah, so anyway, I felt really good about that.
Melody said in the chat room that she saw a video where four runners carried a man across the finish line when he just couldn't make it. Were you guys around for that or not?
I did not see that. No.
Wow.
But I bet there was a few people helping other people because, like I said, at mile 25, well, it was said 1 mile, so it was probably 25.2, but there were people that were holding their quads, rubbing their quads, and trying to walk through it, which is really, even at the medical tent, Courtney wanted to lay down, and they said, you know, that's the worst thing, really. They said you should get stand up and swing your legs, if nothing else. And I've had severe cramping, and I helped her get her shoes off. She goes, "I need to get my shoes off." So I helped her get her shoes off, and I was touching her calf at the time, and it felt like a baseball. All of a sudden, she goes, oh, it's cramping, and it felt like a freaking baseball right in her calf. I was just like, oh, and I've had bad cramps. I have woken up with some really bad cramps in my feet, and the best thing to do is stand up. Yeah.
Well, yeah, help stretch it out.
Mm-hmm.
Also, Nina said to say to Mike, he is her hero. I love what he did for the kids.
Well, thank you very much. They did it for me. It was a mutual exchange of energy. going on, that's for sure.
It really was.
I had no idea until Lydia told me that that is the oldest ongoing marathon in the world, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it is. And I didn't know that until this year either. I knew they had been doing it for a long time. They've changed the course a little bit over the years. But, yeah, basically you go from Hopkinton into downtown Boston, and that's what they've been doing the whole time. I think they weren't running really 26.2 for a while, and so part of changing the course had to do with extending it a little bit. But, yeah, it's ongoing, yeah, since 1880-something or other. Quite a while.
118. It was the 118th marathon.
That's right, the 118th, right, yeah. So 1896?
You're better at math than me, honey.
Well, yeah, I thought it was 1897, but you're part of major history, Mike, to run the year after that. Major history.
Yeah, and just was fortunate enough to have the thought that I really wanted to do that. And knowing it's going to take running two marathons in a year, which normally, at this point in my life, I don't normally do that because you have to run one to qualify for it and then run the second one, Boston itself. And, yeah, I wasn't sure I wanted to do that, would be able to do that, but, yeah, worked out fine.
Yeah, Mike, when he qualified, it was the, is it Great American? The Great American? Marathon?
American Discovery Trail Marathon.
I'm so bad with, yeah, American Discovery Marathon, which runs from Palmer Lake down to Colorado Springs, and he came in second in his age group, that marathon, and then qualified. And they tightened the qualifications, didn't they, Mike?
Yeah, they did from last year. Yeah, my qualifying time was like, had to be 5 minutes faster than what it was last year. And they still got 32,000 runners. But that was a way they were trying to keep the numbers down because they knew they were going to be so high.
Mm.
Yeah, and they also, if you had run the year before, they had, and you got an automatic in. Is that true too, Mike?
If you had run the year before and had been taken off the course before you could finish, then you were allowed, yeah, entry into this one without having to qualify and without any cost to you.
Hmm.
Yeah. That, in fact, when we were flying in, when we were actually standing in the queue, thank you, Southwest, we're standing in our little queue, and we heard two guys talking, and they had been at the marathon the year before.
Right.
And they... Yeah, and in fact, one guy was drinking a beer when everything happened, and, you know, it sounded, and they couldn't go back to their hotel room, and, you know, it was, so they wanted those people to feel good about it, and I'm sure they felt really good about it. I'm just blown away of everybody and how they treated us, and a lot of people got jackets that they wore around, and if someone saw a jacket, they were like, oh, you're here for the marathon, you know, and Mike was kind of incognito, except for the last day he wore his shirt, his marathon shirt.
Mm.
Yeah.
Mm. And
yeah,
even when people didn't know either of us were runners, yeah, they were extremely nice, and they were being nice to one another, who didn't have anything to do with the race or running. I mean, all we saw was people being nice to each other, not just us, not just runners and affiliated people, but everybody.
Everybody. It was amazing. But, you know, my husband, for those of you that don't know this, but my husband has a runner's build. And so people, they didn't say it to me, by the way, who, of course, doesn't have a runner's build, but they would say, they take one look at Mike and they go, oh, are you a runner? Or you look like a runner. Remember the lady, the sweet lady at the restaurant on the Harbor Walk?
Yeah.
Yeah. That was fun.
Wow.
Yeah,
I mean, Boston sounds like a really strong and proud city. It's not normally what people associate with, you know, so-called brotherly love, even though it's so amazingly historic for so many reasons. I have to go there. But, you know, I just, it does say something about how hits in life can empower you in much, I mean, beyond what even the people who did what they did could have ever imagined. I don't know why at this point in time in life people haven't figured out that once you cause a tragedy, it unifies people. It's certainly not a good way to do that, but it unifies people as you try to brace up for the storm. You know, it's happened all throughout the centuries.
So, yeah, definitely. I totally agree with that. And unfortunately, many times it unifies people to do ugly or hateful things like start wars. But in this case, it unified a city that, you're right, is not known as being particularly charitable and kind to one another or to strangers from outside. It just shows you that people can be so imbued with one another's positive energy that they just, it's infectious. That's the word you used earlier to describe how I sound. It was infectious. You caught it from them, and then you bring it back and spread it to other people. Like, instead of a cold or influenza, I'm spreading positive energy now. It feels wonderful. And from a place that generally isn't generating all that positive energy, it generates too much negative energy. And that was part of the wonder of it all, knowing that and just experiencing, oh, my goodness. So much positive.
Wow.
Yeah.
Hey, I think that's my brother on the phone, Lydia. I don't know if you want to take calls or not.
Yeah, I want to ask to see if he has a question. Is it David?
It looks like David.
Hey. Oh, wait. I'm got to bring him up. It's
taking a while. Yeah. Hello.
Hi, David.
I don't have any. I'm going to say good evening to all the participants on the radio. I was at the library working on one of my working on my typing, cleaning up, refining my dissertation, and I seen what time it was, so I took just a moment out to listen to the show late. So I don't even know what the topic is, so there's nothing that I can really add other than to say I hope everybody had a wonderful week, and I'm sit back in the corner here and listen to the rest of what sounds like a very exciting discourse going on with the whomever's all on the radio.
Well, good. I'm glad that you're listening. I'm going to put you back on hold, but we are actually interviewing my husband. Not interview. It's more relaxed than that. But my husband and I went to Boston last week over Easter weekend and to run the marathon. Another thing to talk about is that the marathon is always held on the third Monday, which is Patriots Day. And
that's right.
a lot of people have the day off. So I have some stories about. They also have their baseball game. They start it early. They start at 11, so that by 3 usually it's over, and then people can come out and see a lot of the finishers of the race. So not only do you have all these people racing, all the spectators, then you have a whole baseball game coming out. So we were taking the subway around, me and Courtney, and trying to get – not Courtney, I'm sorry, Amanda. Sorry, Amanda. And we were trying to get closer to the finish line, but there was a couple times when we were literally packed into the subway car like a sardine. And people were in the best moods. They were helpful. Like one time we got on the right car, but it was going to the wrong place. It was actually veering off. So everybody right away told us, hey, you know, you take it to the next stop and then you can get out. And, you know, and then just the next car that comes will not be the E line. You need the, I think it was the B line, but I'm not sure. Anyway, but it was the same color. So I didn't know there were other lines. They're all color coded. We were on the green line, but there's a green line that was an E train. So it was, you know, we didn't go much out of our way, but it was just, that was, everybody wanted to be friendly and helpful, even if they weren't going to the race or whatever. You know, that car was actually going, you know, out, like into, I don't know if the suburbs, but going out
in a total different direction. But people were just, you know, and nobody was crabbing. I mean, one time we were packed in there so tight that I didn't even have to hold on to anything because I was in so tight, I wasn't going to go anywhere. I did tell one guy, I said, if I touch you, I'm not getting fresh. And he goes, oh, I wish you would. It was about 20, you know. I'm like, okay, cool.
Oh, Lord.
Oh, Lord is right. Yeah. And then we had a wonderful dinner in a Japanese restaurant in Winthrop. We stuck kind of eating in Winthrop where we were staying, although we did eat at one tavern and had some wonderful seafood, and I had New England clam chowder. I just had to, and it was absolutely delicious and filling. I think they make it with like tons and tons of cream and butter. It was so good.
Oh.
And Mike had the halibut, right? You had haddock. Yeah, which was with Cajun spices. It was really good, too, because he gave me a bite of it. But, yeah, after the race, we ate at a Japanese restaurant in Winthrop. I can't remember what it was called, Lucky Gardens?
I don't remember. No.
But it was really good food, too. We had a soft-shell crab, and we had a really interesting chi roll. Oh, my God. The soft-shell crab was done with ginger. Oh, man, it was so good. I kind of waddled home after that. Waddled to the inn, anyway.
Talking about all the great food. I totally want to go to Saeed's restaurant.
Oh, you do. Saeed was awesome. And my only regret is that we didn't get to go back there. But I actually friended him on Facebook and liked his restaurant and gave a little review. And, yeah, it was, if you're ever in Winthrop, anybody, you got to go to the Alia Ristorante. Excellent food. Excellent. And the Japanese place was good, too. And the breakfast place was very, very good. So we had great experiences with food. And, you know, that's always high on my list.
So don't forget your bottle for Saeed's place, right?
Yeah, don't forget. Yeah, get your bottle before you go, but there's a liquor store right around the corner with a helpful person. Yeah, I missed seeing that liquor store. I was kind of curious about it. Was it little? Yeah, because it was a little.
Nope.
It's a little town. No, it was big.
It was fairly big for just sitting right in the middle of a block amongst all these little kind of quaint shops and stuff. Yeah, it was fairly good-sized inside. It went back a ways.
Oh, and also Saeed is going to open up a Moroccan restaurant next door to his Italian restaurant.
That's right.
So we're going to have to go back there and have Moroccan food. Oh,
yeah.
Oh, yeah, and I bet it's going to be delicious. So I'm going to we got to go back there. If we had had more time, I started looking. You know, you don't realize that Massachusetts is way far east. And several people even said that. In fact, Amanda from Vancouver, she said that. She said, I didn't realize it. I would have, in a heartbeat, if we were there one more day, we would have jumped on the train and I would have gotten a few of the states that I haven't gotten. I haven't gotten Maine or Vermont or I don't have Rhode Island. What else is up there? There's one more.
New Hampshire.
New Hampshire. Yeah, New Hampshire. I could have checked off those. Yeah, but so we've got to go back. I feel it really strongly. We got to get back to that area. There's so much history. We went to the oldest beach, the oldest public beach in the United States, Revere Beach. We did that. We had some time to kill before our plane. So we took, I said, let's go up to Wonderland. There was, the train that we took all the time to Winthrop was called the Wonderland Line. And so I was like, well, let's go check out Wonderland. And so we did, and we happened in, and it was a block from Revere Beach.
Well,
and by then Mike was wearing his T-shirt, and so we were sitting there, and two Boston guys come walking by. Mike, you want to take this?
Two Boston guys who normally would not have probably talked to either one of us, maybe not even looked at us. Yeah, one of them sees my marathon shirt and they come over right away. Hey, did you run the marathon? And just, yeah, great. Talking to them about the Bruins, you know, and hockey. And, well, that's what I was talking to the one guy about. I'm not sure what Lydia was talking to the other guy about. But one of the guys, you know, very Italian, reminded me of Lydia's nephew, Nick. And just, you know, very outgoing, very warm. You just find, oh, we have things in common with these two early 20-year-old, you know, Bostonians. And just wound up talking to them for 5-10 minutes standing on the beach. Yeah, just unusual in other experiences, but not at all, given the experience we had there. Just, okay, another one of these. That's interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. People were
inspiring. It's very inspiring.
It was very inspiring. And as you guys know, I'm going to be traveling with my sister soon, and I'm going to do some shows. I'm going to do a show in San Francisco. I just put that up, and I also put up the show that I'm doing in Santa Fe. I'm going to travel by train with my sister to San Francisco, and then we're going to go down to Santa Fe, and then Mike is going to join us for a couple days, and we're going to be in Santa Fe. So I'm going to Mike and I love to travel. We love our road trips, and you know, I think we're the best we are together when we travel. You know, I know women, I have women friends who's like, my husband doesn't like to travel. I feel so blessed that my husband loves to travel. And most of the time we're traveling by car, and we love a good road trip. So I'm very excited to travel by train. I wish Mike was going with me.
Oh, well. It'll happen in the future.
Yeah, but I will tell you all about it. And then the next time we go back to Boston, we're going to take a train. I'd love to go in the fall and then take the train up through those other states and end up in Maine. I think that would be so amazing to do, that we're going to have to do it. So, and for anyone who's never taken mass transportation, I'm telling you, folks, give it a try. Now, I'm originally from Chicago, and so I'm used to traveling, you know, mass transportation. In fact, when I was a kid, we didn't have a car. My mother never learned to drive. And we just took the mass transportation. And Chicago's mass transportation has really fallen, I'm sorry to say. But you can still take it. It's okay. But it's really fallen. And what I really liked about Boston is they've built a lot of new lines. They're remodeling a station downtown. It's the oldest station. And well, I guess it was sorely in need of remodeling. But they've invested in their infrastructure and in their mass transit. And I really wish the rest of the country would get on board, because as the baby boomers, which is the bulk of the population, have aged, you know, we're going to be less likely to travel unless we can do it easily, I think. I don't know. That's my plug for mass transit.
Well, I worked with mass transit, so I know all about it.
That's right, you
and
do.
I've been taking
how
it
was
since
it
I was 4 years
was
old.
And we actually took a bus, and we took the L in Seattle, and that was also very easy.
Yes, it was.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, downtown Seattle is geared for transit. Did you guys actually take the bus out to your hotel?
We did.
The motel or whatever you were staying at? Oh, wait,
yeah,
no. You guys actually stayed downtown, didn't you?
No, we stayed by the airport.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, yeah. So did you take the light rail from downtown?
And the bus.
Yeah.
Oh, and the bus. Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, we did.
I didn't do the light rail, but I did buses.
Yeah, we took a cab to our hotel, and we had most of the day, and so and then we took the we took a bus along till it met up with the light rail, and then we took the light rail into downtown.
Mm-hmm.
Very easy. Very easy. You know, it's just convenient. In a big city that you don't know about, who wants a car? Who wants, you know, unless, and, you know, nowadays you do have GPS, but I still think in big cities it's a hassle to park. Mike and I remarked, we went to the expo along with 36,000 other people and maybe more because most people were walking with someone maybe that wasn't running the race like me. And it was very, very crowded. The streets were packed. And at one point we were crossing a street that didn't have a light. So since there were so many pedestrians, they're just walking on through. And there was cars trying to turn. And I ended up waiting because I felt bad for the cars. They were never going to be able to turn.
Oh. Yeah. Wow.
So anyway, I want to see if Mike has anything to want to wrap up because we are getting on time. So do you have anything you want to say about anything since you've been delightful?
Anything at all? Well, I guess I'd just wrap up by something that I expressed very early on in the program today, which is actually experiencing an antidote to hate. Seeing love being given by people to other people and just feeling that healing people, that spiritual healing, ongoing in front of your own eyes is just a wonderful thing to experience. And I'm really glad that we got the chance to experience that this weekend.
I am so grateful to you, and also I want to do a shout out to Shauna Bagan. Shauna is Mike's partner, and she got us that wonderful room at the Inn at the Cove, and at Crystal Cove. And I don't know if she's going to listen to this, but she's absolutely amazing, and I'm grateful to her, and I'm grateful that I got to go with my SH, as Brenda calls you, and that stands for superhero.
Yeah.
I love you,
well,
Mike.
Thank you.
Thanks so
love
much.
You too.
Yeah. Talk to you
You're
in
welcome.
A minute or so.
Hey, Mike.
Yeah.
All right. Goodbye.
I just want to say this hour went really quickly.
Yeah.
Didn't it?
It was so awesome listening to all that. It really was.
Yeah.
It
that's
just amazing. And it's the parallelisms with your show, Time to Love, totally fits the whole theme.
It did, and I didn't even talk to him much about it. I did tell him, I said, you know, I said, this is not going to be real formal. You know, if I think of some questions, I will ask them. But, yeah, so, my husband is pretty amazing. That's a definite. And the whole experience was amazing. I know that my upcoming trip is going to be the same way because I take Time to Love seriously, and for me it's always Time to Love. So, next week, I do want to talk a little bit about my show next week. I'm going to be broadcasting live from the Boulder Potters Guild sale. I'm going to be talking about what's at the sale, how it makes me feel. I may interview a few people or talk to a few of the potters that are going to be there. So that's, even if you're not in the area, if you like art, and if you like love, you want to tune in to next week. But we have shows every day of the week, which is really exciting to me. Tomorrow's show is going to be with Lennis, and it's going to be about Hucks, right?
Right.
I think that's right. Yeah.
Whatever
and
the
that
hot
is. Yeah, whatever the hot
PM.
Topics is. That's at 3 p.m., and that's Pacific Daylight Time. And then Monday night, we have the LNB, Passage to Empowerment, and we are doing, we're actually going to do a few shows about body appreciation, right?
Well, this is the start of the shows as we start to transition towards, you know, now that we've cleansed a lot of stuff, we're moving on to creating positive effects. So The first show is going to be about body appreciation.
Yay.
And learning to love yourself. And then
cool.
That's Monday at 8
and that's
p.m.
Monday, 8 o'clock. Yeah, 8 p.m. That's Pacific time. So 9 o'clock Mountain Standard, which is where I am. And then Tuesday, you can talk about BYO Brilliance. You've changed the time, right?
Yes, it's at 6 p.m. Pacific time, and that's going to be about, well, basically the show is going to be about being yourself, just, you know, having the freedom to be you and taking
so important.
The, yeah, pardon?
So important.
Yeah, it is.
So
and
absolutely.
Oscar Wilde says, be yourself because everyone else is taken. So, since nobody else can do you better than you, you might as well just
be
brilliant
yourself.
At it. Yeah.
You got that right. Yes, and it's a total feeling. Then on Wednesday, we have the psychic show, and the psychic show has changed times, too. Is that at 6 o'clock?
No, it's at 5 p.m.
5 p.m.
with Lennis.
Okay.
Lennis is a psychic show.
And when we say these times, it's we usually say it's Pacific Daylight Time. It's 5 p.m., so I always have to remember that it's an hour later for me, and if you're in the Chicago area, it's going to be 2 hours later, and the East Coast, 3 hours later. And
right.
Then we have Thursday, we have a Filmcology, and that's also Brenda's show. What are you doing on this week?
This Thursday is The Shift. We'll be discussing The Shift, a movie by Dr. Wayne Dyer, Wayne W. Dyer.
And I have watched it twice.
Yeah, it's just, there's nothing I can say to you except to watch it. And if you don't watch it, then there's nothing I can really say to you to get it. You could try reading about it, but I'm sorry, it's just not the same thing. So.
Yeah.
Anyway, it'll be a discussion. It's not really going to be a psychology thing. So if nobody watches it or hasn't seen it or is able to make it, I will talk about some things having to do with shifting your mindset and where you are. But I couldn't do the movie justice by trying to describe it. That would just be ridiculous. Well, that's not a real positive frame, but it's just, I just can't steal that thunder. So, and I remember when I first was talking about even watching it, thinking, what's it about? What's it about? It's one of those movies where anybody could tell you what something is about, but it would not fit because The Shift
right.
is really personal. And one
mm-hmm.
of the things you find when you watch it is it's going to connect to something that's going on with you. So.
Wonderfully said. That's wonderfully said. And then Friday we have Traffic Jam with Lennis, and she's changed that time too to see if we can capture more people on their way home, whatever, and that's going to be at 5. Is that at 5 or 6?
5 p.m.
5 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time. And then Saturday is my show, Time to Love, which will be, again, live at the Boulder Potters Guild sale. So, folks, tune in because really and truly all of us, myself and Brenda and Nina and Lennis, we all have the similar mindset of empowering people, making people feel better. And so please give a listen any day of the week, and you can hear us on the archives. Any show can be archived. Any last words, Brenda?
No, it's just a wonderful show, and the parallelisms were so perfect, and just, you know, what it did and what happened, how it unified everyone, and all that outpouring of love from a place that may not be known for doing that, and it's just, I loved even how Mike ended, that there was these guys that would probably never even have looked at you guys. You were embraced.
Yeah.
Austin gave a great big hug to everybody.
They really and truly did. It was just amazing. I highly recommend Boston. Definitely travel there and enjoy it. Soak up the flavor. It might not be that exact same what was going on, which was truly magic, a good antidote to what had happened the year before. But I truly recommend going there. Nina, I want to give a shout out to you for manning the chat room. You are absolutely awesome. I love you very much. And get your throat feeling better. I know allergies can really be bad. I'm going to end like I always do with my song. So God bless you all. Enjoy your day. Go out there and spread the love, because you know what? It's always time to love. Yeah. Jenny Turner.
The wrap.